G'day, I am Mordechai Becher.
And I am Yehoshua Karsh.
And unfortunately, this last week, we heard of the passing away of Rabbi Avraham Gurewitz. Rav Avraham Gurewitz, known as primarily nowadays as the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Moshe, which has some other name, but I forgot what it is. There's some name people call it. But in any case, yeah. Ner Moshe, famous yeshiva in Israel. And Rav Gurewitz was a Rebbe prior to that at Mishkan HaTorah, otherwise known as Split Tree, and prior to that at ITRI, Israel Torah Research Institute, where we, together with a lot of friends of ours, studied back in the Jurassic period. And so we thought we'd talk in this podcast about some of our Rebbeim, some of our teachers during that amazing period of time that we were studying in Yeshiva and Kollel, etc., and just to talk about them. We have no actual plan or course here, but we'll start with Rabbi Gurewitz.
So it's, I think for us, I think what happened was Rav Usher Rubinstein, a blessed memory, was our first Rebbe. Like he was, right? We had him for part of the year.
Not for me. I came. Oh, yes. Actually, yes. Yes, correct.
Yeah, yeah. We had him for part of the year, and then Rabbi Gurewitz took over.
This was in 1978.
Yeah, right. At some point in that year, he took over. So we had both him and Rav Usher in the same year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just remember how down to earth he was. Like he sat in the back a lot of times. He would sit like in the very back row. All the other Rabbeim would sit on the, you know, the Mizrachvant. They would sit up in the front facing us. But Rabbi Gurewitz, he was like always in the back. There'd always be Bachrim around him, you know, talking to him and learning, but also hearing his opinions on different subjects. I remember that first Purim. No, it wasn't the first Purim. It was the second Purim.
I don't remember.
It was the second Purim. You don't remember it because you were part of it. You were completely unconscious during it. But it was the next year because I remember Akiva Tor and all those people were there, and they didn't come till our second year. So, but I remember, like, it was just indicative of how Bachrim got along with him, really felt connected to him. He could be, you know, he, first of all, people loved him. I mean, there were students who absolutely loved him. And he clearly showed affection to students, but he could also be sarcastic, and he could be blunt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
extremely
yes.
Blunt. Yeah.
Yeah, he always used to have some commentary on life in the United States. And I remember I didn't know much about the United States. I came from Australia.
Yeah.
I remember he pulls a cutting from a newspaper out of his pocket and shows it to me. It's an advertisement for a meat restaurant, Glut Kosher, in New York, in which it's during the 9 days when we don't eat meat. It advertises a siyum every night, in which
you're talking about 45 years ago.
Yes,
this was going on, not correct. Yesterday. 45 years ago,
a siyum every night. I guess the mashgiach made a siyum every night so it would allow anyone in the restaurant to eat meat. And there was a belly dancer as well featured in this. And he says to me, "This is America." I said, "Oh my god." We don't have that in Australia.
No, but you already knew from any American teachers that you had experienced.
Yes,
that probably was the case. If you extrapolate,
but this is in the religious world.
Yes,
and he also. I remember there was one. I was not actually in his class for a while. For most of the time, I was actually in Reb Chaim Brand, who is Israeli.
Oh, that's you went to Reb Chaim Brand.
I went to Reb Chaim Brand.
That was your first year, because I went to Reb Chaim Brand the next year, but you went. You went during your first year. So you may not. Did you have him, though? You must have had him.
I had him very briefly.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I do remember, like, I don't know, some guy, he made some, gave an explanation of the Gemara, and guys were asking on it. And he said, "What's the, why are you objecting so much? You guys jealous because you didn't come up with it?" Right? This is the type of stuff he used to say. And he once, I was not in the class when he did this, but there were a group of guys who we recognized. It was sometime in the middle of a lengthy semester, a lengthy zman, and he told the guys, "We're going to the Dead Sea." And they said, "What?" And he took a bunch of guys in his car to the Dead Sea, Yam HaMelach, to swim and hike.
They have picture. We
Yeah,
saw
we saw
pictures of
pictures
those
of that
guys.
recently. Yeah, so that was right, and absolutely brilliant. And I remember, like, once he was, it was just after it was Maariv, it was in Mishkan HaTorah, and they'd said Baruch Hu. The Chazan had said Baruch Hu as Hashem Avorach, and someone was in the middle of a conversation with Rabbi Gurevitz, and he continued the conversation after Baruch Hu. And then someone came over and said, "You're not right. Mishnah Brura says you can't do it." So he came the next day with a written responsum, a tshuva, showing that it was permitted to do that. And he said it was based on the Gemara. The Gemara says in Yuma that if you see a Torah scholar who transgressed a sin at night, don't suspect him, because by morning he'll have
Asa
done teshuva, which means
tshuva.
he'll have repented. But the Hasidim understand if you see a litvak, a misnaget, a non-Hasidic who did a sin at night, don't worry. By morning he'll have written a responsum that shows that it's permitted. So he said, "There you go. That's what he actually did." And he would sit under the no smoking sign.
Yes, smoking.
Smoke. So there was a little bit of that. You know, guys, I think, were attracted to that rebellious
100%,
component of it.
100%.
I remember one idea that he said, which is phenomenal. He was saying that, you know, he used to carry Rav Shach's books or something for him to when he was in Ponovitch. So Rav Shach was giving a shiur to the whole yeshiva, shiur klali. And someone asked a question in the middle, and Rav Shach says, "That's an excellent kasha. I have to rethink this." He closes the books and he walks out. And Rav Gurevitz says to him, "But there's a simple answer to that question." Rav Shach says, and he tells him, and he says, "Yes, but the fact that I didn't think of it at that moment, obviously there's something wrong with my class. I have to rethink it." So Rav Gurevitz said, "That is the explanation. The Gemara says you should only receive Torah from a rabbi who's like a malach, like an angel." So he said, "What does it mean, like an angel?" She said, "When Manoach and his wife saw the angel, it says that the angel went up to heaven in a fiery pillar." And then the Pasuk says, I don't remember the exact language, it says, "And it was when he did not return, as Yada Manoach, then Manoach knew that he was an angel." So Rav Gurevitz said, because had he been a human, I mean, seriously, because someone goes up to heaven in a pillar of fire, you're not convinced they're an angel? He said, "No, because had it been a human who did this through trickery or some way or miracle, he would have come back and
Just
said,
to
oh,
see a
not bad,
reaction.
eh? Yeah, right? You got a pigeon, kvittel, you know, as they turn, right?" So he says, the fact that he didn't come back, he says, that's what he saw in Rav Shach. He didn't go back. So that made him a malach. That was one explanation he gave, but yeah.
Also, I don't remember another Rebbe we, or maybe a Rabiel Schwartz. Rabiel Schwartz, as far as a Rebbe who was writing Sforim as we, in real time. So,
Yes.
like, if people asked, I remember Jonathan Zephyrin asked him, had asked him a question, and then it ended up in a like the next volume of Dvar
Or
Avraham, or
Avraham.
Avraham, I mean, not Dvar Avraham, or Avraham.
Multiple volumes of that book on the Haggadah, on Hilchos Talmud Torah of the Rambam, on various Masechtas, on different parts of Tanakh. Yes, he was a very prolific author. And I remember Rav Asher Rubinstein said about him. He said that we, he said, "When we were students in Ponovitch, we both finished Shas." He says, "But I finished at Bekias in a quick survey." He says, "He finished at Be'iyun in depth." Remember him telling me that. So that was something about him. And yeah, and very, just very also extremely passionate about truth. Right, did not bear fools lightly, and
sometimes you'd see these guys who weren't even from the yeshiva. They'd end up in the back of the basement, and you'd see them in animated discussion with him in the back there. And people are trying to figure out who are these guys. They're just some guys from outside the yeshiva that heard about something he had said and came in. And he did not shy away from having
Done.
at it with those guys.
So, okay, and then you mentioned Rav Asher Rubinstein. So I just received a few weeks ago from the family a three-volume book about him called Mi Ya'aleh. And it's a treasure trove of stories, et cetera, but Rav Asher Rubinstein, who came from Long Island and also went to Ponovitch, and he became the mashgiach, really. Because he was much more about giving mussar, rebuke, and ways of looking at life and the world, and guiding people rather than giving a class. That's what he did much more, and he continued doing that
Although
into split
we
shift.
did, or at least I did, I think you did too, heard shir from him our first
Yep,
year. Yeah,
absolutely.
we did hear
Yes.
shir from him.
Yep. Also a brilliant person, but just someone who was full of simcha, of joy of life, and focus. I remember standing on the street on the side in Unsdorf, and standing next to Dov Weiss, Bernie Weiss, who I believe now lives in Cincinnati or Indianapolis, somewhere like Cincinnati. And we're standing there, and it wasn't a wide, and Rav Asher Rubinstein, it was before morning service, so it was in the morning. And Rav Asher Rubinstein walked by us on the way to prayers, and he didn't see us. We're literally standing right there. And Bernie Weiss said to me, he says, every fiber and molecule of his being is going to Shachris. That's why he didn't see us. It's like just completely immersed in that. And I remember he told, he used to, yeah, I, there were some things which I saw in the book, which I remembered because they interviewed me, which I told them. But remember, he once said, it's only permitted to be depressed, to be sad once a day. Or I think he said three times a day. He says, when in the silent prayer, you're saying, I sinned. The rest of the time, every bracha, you've got to be happy. That's one of the things he said that,
Nice. Nice. I remember I came to Itri from Brisk Yeshiva in Chicago. Now, Brisk in Chicago is a Soloveitchik family. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was the Rosh Yeshiva. And then three of his sons were Rabbeim there. And there were a few other people that had been Talmidim of Rav Aaron that were also Rabbeim there. And the general atmosphere in the yeshiva was of deep respect, but for a sense of deep respect for your Rebbe. But there wasn't necessarily a closeness. Nobody, what I mean by that is, I mean, I shouldn't say it entirely. I know people felt to some degree close, but there was never a time when your Rebbe would put his arm around you, like, that th this was not this was it was very formal, a little bit like cult, a little cult. It was cult to Litvak, a bit, like pretty much. That was the
A cult,
experience.
by cult,
Yes.
rakash means the Yiddish word cult for cold, not the
Right.
English word cult.
Right, for cult. That's a good point. I
I'm just
don't mean
pointing
that.
out to not
Right.
everyone in the audience understand, all three people, not everyone understands Yiddish. Yeah.
Yes. So I ended up at Itri, and he was my Rebbe then the first year. And I remember like going up to him and asking him a question. And while I'm asking the question, he put his hand on my shoulder. And at first I'm like, what is going on? It seems like something strange is happening. I wasn't sure what it was. And then I saw an actual warmth, expression of warmth. Again, the Rabbeim in Brisk, they were not mean, and they were very sincere, but it just did not, that warmth. And he would squeeze your hand, like especially if he was like giving you Musser, they would be with a smile, but he would squeeze your hand. And you and I were at a chasana. This is already, we're on in our careers already. We're at a Zefren
Oh,
chasana.
yes, that's
We
right.
were at a Zefren chasana, and Rav Usher was there at the chasana. And he, there was some stuff going on that you and I had sort of gotten ourselves involved in, and he was very worried about us. And he was sitting in between both of us, squeezing our hands, just like it had been, like decades before, 30 years before, when he had done it. It was like nothing changed. He was still worried about us and somehow causing mischief. And
And I remember he gave a subtle rebuke to me. I remember as I walked in, he says, "Ah, the famous Rabbi Becher who entertains and educates people all over the world." He said entertains first and then
yes.
educates. And I type of like felt, oh boy. Yeah. So he had he gave that rebuke. I remember he gave a class. It was about preparing us for dating when we were about ready to get married. And he said, "Of course, you'll wear your hat and jacket and your suit, the three-piece suit and the tie." I said, "What about someone who doesn't regularly wear a hat? Should he wear a hat on the date?" And Rav Asher slaps me in the back and he says, "Everyone in this yeshiva wears a hat." And I said, "I'm asking for a friend." So he slaps me again. He says, "He should ask his mashgiach." I said, "He is."
He put up with a he
Yeah,
put
he put
up
up with a lot, yes.
with a lot with us. He but he and he of all the Rabbeim, I mean, he was the one who, at least in those first few years, he was the one we were constantly involved with,
Oh,
whether
yeah.
and also Bein HaSdarim, and I mean, Bein
For
HaZmanim,
sure.
not just Bein HaSdarim, Bein HaZmanim. Like, especially when Mishkan HaTorah started, we actually ate, I think we had breakfast in his house.
I don't remember that. Maybe.
I do remember we had the, when Bein, it was the first Bein HaZmanim, it must have been Pesach Bein HaZmanim or something. You might have gone, do you think you went back maybe to
Was in
see
England, I think.
for that?
I went to England for that, yeah.
So anyways, we were eating, breakfast in his house. We were, and he was one of those people who always was available for us to talk through stuff. And but
When
I
I
loved the fact that he, it was just, how long ago could that have been? Like 15 years ago, something like that, when he still felt like we
yeah.
were these little Bachrim that had found some mischief.
I remember when I got married, my parents came, my family came from Australia for the wedding. He invited them for Shabbos, and we ate at his house for Shabbos.
Awesome.
Everyone loved it, and he also found me a tailor to make a suit for me. The name of the tailor was Zalman Rob. I remember that. The suit was just, he was a good tailor, but the style was for a 50-year-old man, not a 25-year-old person. But it did come with two pairs of trousers. Any case, that was, yeah. He used to say things sometimes which would be just to make a point. He would exaggerate. He'd say something like, I remember he said something like, 5 minutes on Rehov Ben Yehuda, 5 minutes on Ben Yehuda Street is equal to 100 hours, takes away 100, it's something like 100 hours in the yeshiva, in the Beit Midrash. Every 10 minutes you spend on Ben Yehuda, you lose this. And guys were saying, divide by 10, multiply by 100, that type of
Well,
thing.
remember when the younger guys started coming to Mishkan HaTorah and they experienced Rav Usher's, I don't remember what night, Tuesday night schmoozing, or there was one night of the week where he gave his scary schmoozing like that, like where he'd
Oh,
say
yes.
stuff like that. And I remember when younger Bachrim would come in after that first schmooze, we knew to go over and talk to him. They needed like a debriefing.
Yes.
Like and some like therapy to prevent long-term trauma, because he would, it was so like scary, when he would
Yes.
yeah.
But I remember he when he accepted me to Yeshiva. I think I told the story on the podcast when I came to Italy. Didn't I tell that story?
I've completely blotted out
We may
anything
have.
you've said on the
But I was
podcast.
when I was in Israel with my parents a year before I went to Yeshiva,
No
and
recollection of you talking about
of
on the
looking around
podcast.
for a yeshiva to go to.
Yeah.
I eliminated a couple of them, and a couple of them eliminated me. And a guy.
Onovich, the Mir.
And I met a guy at a bus stop, and he said, "Why don't you try Itri?" He said, "Take this bus to the end of the line, walk down the hill,
That's
and
how it happened? You met some
yes,
guy at a bus
I
stop?
met a guy at a bus stop. He
Now,
said,
you
"Take this
definitely did
bus,
not tell that story.
go to the end of the line, go down the hill." So I said, "Okay." Now, at the time, I was wearing jeans, t-shirt, and my hair was over my collar. And I had a kippah sruga, knitted yarmulke. So I walked into the Itri. I did not see the Beit Midrash. Had I seen the Beis Midrash, I would never have gone there.
This was during the Zman.
Yes. I
Okay.
went into the office. That was the first building you came to.
Right.
And Rav Asher Rubinstein was there. And he interviewed me.
Was Rav Naaman there?
Yes, Rav Naaman actually greeted me and
Yeah.
spoke to Rabbi Rubinstein, Rav Asher.
Okay.
And I was so impressed with his warmth and the feeling of love, and the fact that I failed the test miserably. I could not, answer questions on the Gemara, etc. But my Hebrew was good, and he said, "You're accepted. Just get a haircut before you come." And I went back to Australia. This is like December the year before I came, and I wrote a letter to the yeshiva, asking what would be the curriculum and required texts for the next. For the term, and they must have laughed their head. So I get a letter back on the official Itri letterhead.
It
This,
is
by the way,
the Israel Torah Research
yes,
Institute.
this,
Of
by the way,
course,
is
I
in the
could.
book. This story is in the book.
Oh, it is. Nice.
The whole story. And I get a letter back on the Itri letterhead, and it says Talmud, Tractate Yevamos, Musar, Mesilas Yesharim, Halacha, Mishnah Brura. And I said, "Great, excellent." So I got the curriculum. I came with the texts to Yeshiva. And on the plane on the way from Australia on the way to Itri, there's a guy from Australia who had been to Itri. Who actually became Hasidic, became a Gera Chosid at Itri. So he comes over and we're schmoozing. And his father was a butcher, a kosher butcher in Melbourne. So he had a salami with him and a knife. This is before 9/11. He says, "You want some salami?" I said, "Yeah, sure." Cuts off some salami. It's like bizarre encounter. And he says, "So what are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to Israel. I'm going to Yeshiva." He says, "Which one?" I said, "Itri." He says, "Itri, you need to get a haircut." I said, "I just had one." So I got to Israel. I had a second haircut.
Oh, you trusted him. That was good that you
I
trusted
trusted
him.
him, and I ended up having a third haircut because friends of mine in Israel told me that look, it's a you got to get a black yarmulke, they said, and get another hair. So I had three haircuts before I went to Itri and traded my yarmulke. So that was quite interesting. And the first person I met when I went there was Rav Asher Rubinstein, and that's why I went. That's why I went there. So that was pretty crazy story. But that's how I was in.
Nice. That's ridiculous.
I went to Kol Torah, which I'd heard of in Australia.
Yeah.
And I imagine I walked into Kol Torah looking like that. They looked to me like I was an alien. The rabbi, one of the rabbis says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I'm thinking of coming to this yeshiva." And he's like, "Yeah." He interviews me, failed miserably. He says, "Look," he says, "the only way you'll be able to come here is if I get a great recommendation, strong recommendation from my second cousin in Australia, who's a Rebbe in the high school he went to." I said, "What's his name?" Told me his name. That rabbi hated me. So I said, "Forget Kol Torah." So
Yeah.
that's when I walked out of Kol Torah and I met someone who, an American guy, you see, we were just schmoozing. He said, "Try your tree." So, but it was, yeah, it was Rav Asher, and it was quite amazing, quite amazing. And ended up, he moved. We all moved to Mishkan HaTorah, to Splittree. It was a split from Itri.
Yep.
And he became the Mashgiach. He was the Mashgiach there.
He was the American Mashgiach in Itri.
Yes,
Rav
correct.
Yoel Schwartz was like the Israeli Mashgiach, and sort of overall Mashgiach, but he fulfilled that role, Mashgiach, in Itri too. Yeah.
Yes. Reuel Schwartz was
He
his
was
name.
young, by the way. You know, he was like 30
Yes.
when we first met him. He was quite young for that kind of job. Yeah, Reuel Schwartz.
Reuel Schwartz was amazing. He wrote probably about 30 books at
He's
least.
the other one who was writing Svarim while we were
Encyclopedic
in.
knowledge. Yes.
Yeah.
And he used to have a once a week. I lived for this. Once a week, he used to do a Q&A session. You could ask him questions on anything. We asked him about aliens. We asked him about just like anything, right? And good discourse on it. And brilliant man. And I remember one Elul. I think I must have slept in. And there's a knock at the door, and the door opens, and
Yeah.
I hear someone say, "Milchama, milchama, war." What? Oh my God! It was in Israel, right? And he says, "Milchemes Hayetzer, the war with the evil inclination."
The fact that he came into our rooms to wake us up in
Yes,
his tallis and tefillin,
he did that.
he's that level of Talmud Chacham is coming into your room to wake you up because we're late for minyan. That was ridiculous.
You can see that, and his roles were interesting because he was also Mashgiach at Dvar Yerushalayim, which is a
Yeah.
yeshiva for Baalei Tshuva.
Yeah. He had something, he had Israeli, he had connection to, well, eventually he was involved with
Nachal
the
Charedi,
Nachal Haredi,
the
and he was
Ruach
also involved with Bnei Noach. I
Yes.
think he might have either written a siddur for them or been involved with
Yeah,
something
he
like putting
wrote some
together a
books on
siddur for them.
He was
He
in
was
Russia
on the
with them.
Sanhedrin.
He was one of the people who started the attempt at a Sanhedrin, a reenactment.
Sanhedrin.com.
Yeah. So he was a fascinating person and very, very extreme about his love for the land of Israel.
When you
He would
paint him,
tell us
I
vacation.
remember going up to him to tell him I'm going home for Pesach, and he would look me in the eye and go, Asur. Asur.
Prohibited. Yeah, right. How are you allowed to leave? It's unbelievable. Yeah. He said you could not go to Eilat because it was a doubt it may be considered outside
Bussard.
the biblical borders of the land of Israel. So he was, yeah, he never left Israel. Yeah, never.
He
Oh,
did he
Meir,
ever leave Me'ez Sharim? I mean, he did,
yeah,
obviously.
well,
He
he
went
used
to
to walk
Itri.
all, yeah, he used to walk all over, but he used to go all over Israel. He used to write these books, and he did not believe in making a living from teaching Torah. So he and his wife ran a store in on Malchay Yisrael Street
It was
called
like women's clothing or
Srigat
something.
Yoel. It
Yeah.
was embroidery and women's like head coverings and stuff. And
Yeah.
they used to sell his books at the store. So
In the window.
I was walking past there. I was in Israel in May, this May. I was walking past the store and
It
it's not,
still exists?
yes, the name has changed, but it's still run by his family. He passed
Really?
away. It's run by his family. And there's a little table outside. As I'm walking by, one of his granddaughters comes out and puts a book that he wrote on the table. It's called Sefer Achinuch L'Doreinu, which was I'm giving a course on reasons for the commandments in YU.
Yeah.
And she comes out with this book, right? Sefer Achinuch, updated for our generation, reasons for the commandments by Rosh Foros. I look at the price. It was like 12 shekels. Something was like nothing.
Well,
I said,
usually they were like
no,
small. They were
this one's about
that
the
was
size
a thick
of
one.
Sefer Achinuch. I walk into the store. I say, is this the accurate price? They said, yeah, fine. Okay. And I look inside. Who is it published by? It's published by the Schwarz Embroidery, by the store.
By the store.
They published it. It's amazing. You don't get people like that. And I remember I bought stuff in the store, and he
Yeah.
had this note, he had a pad of receipts with carbon paper. And he'd write you a receipt, and he'd have a copy for taxes and stuff, and that's how you get it. And he used to walk everywhere. I don't know for sure he used to walk everywhere, but
Well,
he very rarely took buses or
I
you.
remember being on a tour of the old city with him.
Oh yeah.
He did some kind of a walking tour, like on the outside, like showing us all, obviously issues of note from Bais Rishon and Bais Sheni and stuff. But it started outside the walls, and then it went inside. I remember we saw the Broad Wall. I also that he walks incredibly fast.
Yes.
And we were going through. So by the end of that walking tour, which is a couple of hours, I was absolutely exhausted. I remember him coming into, this is what, like one of the first few days I was in Itri. He came into our room and we were playing Mordechai Ben David. I was, David Zephron was my roommate at the time. And we were playing Mordechai, like it was a cassette in those days. And we're playing Mordechai Ben David. And he comes into the room and he goes, Asur. Asur. And I was explaining the Mordechai Ben David, hello. And he goes, which I thought would resolve the problem. And he goes, what do I care if it's Mordechai Ben David? It's also to listen to music. Why do you think you can listen
Post
to
destruction of
music?
the temple.
Yes, yes.
I
It
remember
was such another world.
we once had a talk by Rav Meltzer, Rishmayahu Meltzer, Yibadel l'chaim tovim, Rishmayahu Meltzer, who was very, I would say, hardcore. He gave a class about music. He spoke about music, and he talked about Mordechai Ben David as the beat from the street. That was the term he used. Right. So now, nowadays, like Mordechai Ben David is like old school, traditional, frum, religious Jewish music. Then he said, that's the beat from the street. And I remember one just before, it was just before the first vacation, Bein Hazmanim. And it was the last class before vacation. And
You're talking about like Sukkos?
I don't remember which. I
Yeah.
think the one
Okay.
after Tisha B'Av vacation,
Oh, that.
the
Oh,
summer.
okay. The
And
summer.
I'm type of like, my mind is not on the Gemara. I'm thinking Eilat or Tiberias. That's basically when I'm bouncing back and forth. And I'm probably most people. Rav Meltzer, who is a total masmid, I mean, learning is every, that's all he's learning. He walks in and he starts the class by saying, I love Bein Hazmanim. I love vacation. So to me, it was like he would have walked in and said, I love lobster or cheeseburger. It was like, I love vacation. We're like, and he says, I can learn any masechta I want. That's what he loved about vacation. He can learn any tractate of the Talmud he wants. He's not limited to what the yeshiva has him teach.
I don't know if you remember, Rav Shalom Shvadron
Oh,
came to Itri to get us to sign that we are going to learn one of the weeks of that Bein Hazmanim. There was like a three. There's 3 weeks to Bein Hazmanim, and he came in, and he announced that he was doing this thing. He was going from yeshiva to yeshiva to yeshiva, and he announced that he's got this project going. And then one at a time, we were called in to, there was like a office room. Rav Shalom Shvadron was there, and I don't remember who else was there, somebody from the yeshiva. And it was just you and them and this thing, this paper to sign.
no
And they
pressure,
would ask you,
pressure.
no pressure. And they would ask, or are you interested in doing this? There was no chance that
Don't remember that. That may have been before I.
I particularly remember because I smoked at the time, and he could tell, he could smell it on me, Rav Shalom Shvadron, and he says, "Atama Shane," and I said, "Yes." He goes, "I also did when I was young." You could tell from his voice he must have done it, whatever. But it was a bond between us. I felt like a close bond with Rishon Chardon at that time. It was just like such a, yeah. And also Beit Safat, just living next to all the Kollel guys who would be
They
like
lived in
living
the
in the Arab
yeah, those who don't
town, Beit
know,
Safafa.
Itri Yeshiva was in Talpiot, type of the end of Talpiot. You could actually, it was so far out, you could walk to the Rachel's tomb, Kever Rachel, from there. We did that occasionally. You could walk to Beit Lechem, and it was right next to an Arab village called Beit Safafa. And Rav Mordechai Elephant, the head of the yeshiva,
Yep.
Rosh Yeshiva, and a number of the guys in the Kollel lived in the Arab village, which was a 5-minute walk from the yeshiva.
Because that's how he essentially, that building, that campus, had been a Jordanian.
a Jordanian military hospital, I think it was, or something like that, or
And
base.
he squatted there right after the Six-Day War, and he was given the property. So he owned the yeshiva and like a whole swath of land, even in Beit Tzafafa. Like he was also that was he was quite an experience, Rabbi Elefant.
My gosh, yes. I remember they used to have guys go up to his house to make a minyan on Shabbos because he couldn't walk. It was difficult for him to walk down to the yeshiva. So they called, there was like exactly, there were nine guys. So I was one of them. And so it was my first few months. I did not own a suit or a tie or a hat. And we go up there, and my accent was pure, modern Hebrew, etc. So they called, we go up there. They didn't realize I was a Levi. So they gave someone else Levi, which means they were forced to give me Maftir and Haftorah. So I said the brachot and the maftir and the haftorah in my, Israeli Hebrew accent, no hat, no jacket, etc. And loudly, Rabbi Elephant loudly whispers to someone, "Who's the Tzioni? Who's the Zionist?" And someone says, "He learns here." And he says, "Oi!" And that was it. That was my first encounter with Rabbi Elephant. That was like a, that was pretty wild.
He was from another world. I mean,
Oh yeah.
he functioned in a complete. I remember he used to give Shir Klali like once a week, or was it once a week? I don't know. It was
A little
pretty
less
often.
frequent than
Yeah,
that, I think.
but it was fairly often, and he would sit like
On
on
a
top.
table on the stage.
Right by the Aron, right,
Yes.
like the Aron Kodesh was behind him, and he was like he'd sit there with a table and he'd be smoking,
A
you
pipe.
know, up, yeah.
He would spend the first few minutes of the class doing the pipe, and you'd be sitting there. He'd do the tobacco, taps it down, lights it, and then he would give class with his
And
pipe.
he somehow had Kisvei Yad from the Brisker Rav that
Yes.
nobody else had. He had like proprietary, like, handwritten notes or something from the Brisker Rav that nobody else had,
He was a
and
student
they
of Leib Mullen. Yeah, he was a student of Leib Mullen, who was from,
so somehow he got access to them. And I remember it was sort of like even the family was trying to get at some of them, but I remember that that was part of the subject. I remember the guys he used to have somebody come up, like Yerachmiel Fried or Chaim Pass, or some of these guys would go up to learn with him before, like while he was preparing it.
two in the
And
morning.
you'd have these people like Rav Shlomo Fischer or Rav Chaim Brant or some of these, you know, these people that would, they would, you know, ask him questions while he was giving the Shir Klali. There'd be like animated discussion between him and the people, because they were all supposed to stay for
And
his
these
Shir
people were
Klali.
the most brilliant people you've ever met.
Rav
There was
Brettler, Rav
Rav
Michal
Shlomo
Zilber.
Zilber, who used to do Shas every year, and and Rav Shlomo Fischer, who knew everything,
They
he
all had to
asked.
sit there. They all stood there, and he would give his Shir Klali. It was quite it was and
It was
yeah.
a theatric, very theatric and very dramatic,
Our
the whole
first
situation.
year, the finance minister from South Africa came to speak to us
Oh yeah.
because he was negotiating a coal deal between Israel and South Africa.
And he
And then
introduced people from different
yes, from the country.
countries.
Did you represent Australia?
Yes, I did. I was the only
Nice.
Australian in the yeshiva. He says from
Ah.
Australia. And then there was a group of Russian Jews, brilliant guys, like brilliant guys, who he'd said just sit on the couch and completely ignore everything that is happening. And he walks by them, and we're all standing there, and introduced to the South African government official, and Rav Elephant, and there's a group of these Russian guys just sitting at the couch thinking, looking like that, ignoring everything. He says, "This is a group of Russian intellectuals from the Soviet Union."
Intellectuals.
They were actually Russian intellectuals from the Soviet Union, all of them, right? But
But they had to play a stereotypical role.
he said, "Just absolutely do not acknowledge us, ignore us as we walk by." And that's what he says. And they're like sitting there, like, just thinking and deliberately ignoring everything going on. It was like just like very dramatic. It was like hilarious.
I had a moment or two with him, and I once he had once been upset with me about something, and then he invited me to be his guest at the yeshiva for the next Shabbos. And this is when Mishkan HaTorah was just starting. I remember you looked like you were in mourning. You looked terrible. You looked absolutely terrible. And I thought it was because you were so upset about the whole splittery thing that was going on. It ends up that you spent the night on Masada, and that's why you
Well,
looked.
not Masada. I was in En Gedi.
Oh, En Gedi. You spent the night
I
in En
went for a
Gedi.
hike with a friend of mine in En Gedi, and we got lost, and we ended up spending the night in on the top of this plateau with only one water between us. It was not good, right? That was
So
slight
because I had
dehydration.
already been away from Itri for like 3 days,
Couple of
it felt
weeks.
like it was 6 months that I was already away. And when I came back, it's like I've seen long lost friends who I haven't seen in forever. And there you were, looking
Almost
so,
Moslems.
so terrible. And I was sure that it was because this whole thing with Splitter was happening. But anyways, he hadn't been happy with me. And then, but then he invited me like for Shabbos to come for Shabbos. So. And he explained to me, he goes, I just want to explain things to you. He said the Rogatchover was famous for yelling at his Bachrim. He said there was a guy who once came who was looking for a chosan for his daughter, a wealthy guy who came to the Rogatchover, and he asked if he could sit and watch the Rogatchover giving shir and like to get a sense of the Talmidim. And so after the shir, the Rogatchover says, I think this particular guy would be a good choice for you. And he says, that particular guy, you were yelling at the guy. You called him a behemoth at one point. And the Rogatchover said, my behemoths are Talmidei Chachamim. And that's what Rabbi Elifet was saying. I know I yelled at you, but just remember what the Rogatchover said.
Was a guy who used to go jogging, and one of the Israelis complained that they saw an American, one of the American students jogging in shorts. And so Rav Elephant calls him over, and he says, I hear you're running around in your gachkas, your underwear. He says, you have to stop or you're out of the yeshiva. So he says that they're not, it's not. There's not, they're not guts, not underwear, they're gym shorts. He says, don't play semantics with me. You run around them again, you're out.
Yeah. Now, you said that you were in Rav Brandt's, Rav
Rav
Chaim
Chaim
Brandt's
Brand.
shir, and I also was the, but it was not until my next year. We went to Rav Meltzer for the first part of the year, and then I went to Rav Chaim Brandt for like after Pesach.
He was a Yerushalmi, genuine Yerushalmi, and
I think he was Reb Shlomo Fisher's brother-in-law or something. He was somehow,
maybe.
I think he was somehow related to Reb Shlomo Fisher.
And Shlomo Fisher was a unique individual who is not so well known in the world. His brother was the head of the Badatz, Rav Yisroel Yaakov Fisher. Rav Shlomo wrote a number of amazing svarim and was on the Beit Din Hagadol of the Rabbanut, Chief Rabbinate, based in. And he was the Google of the yeshiva. Basically, he would just stand there, and people would ask him questions on absolutely everything all time. And he'd stay at the yeshiva. He had rooms in the dorm where he'd stay until
During the week.
then he'd go home for Friday Shabbos. Give a shiur at his house Friday morning. I used to go to. Where guys from a whole bunch of different yeshivas would come to his house in Mea Shearim, Rehov Ethiopia, and hear shiur from him Friday morning. And he'd occasionally give these philosophy classes, Hashkafa shiurim at Itri. And he'd use words. I remember once he was talking about two types of belief, transcendental faith and immanent. And he said, Emunah immanentali. The emunah transcendentali, and one of the Israelis asked me, "What are these words even mean?" Right? He says, I said, I said Ze'ivrit. It's Hebrew, the transcendental. You know, so he's like, but he used to words like that, and he was,
Nochach and Nistar is
yes,
typically how
right.
they would
And
say
he
it. Yeah.
was, but he was just a
He
mind that was
once asked me, he goes, "Did you ever read Jules Verne?" Like at the beginning of an answer, I asked him something. He goes, "Did you ever read Jules Verne?" And I said, I think it was particularly 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea he was referring to. And then I said, yes. And then he said, well, and this part, remember when it said, it was just like so ridiculous. It was so ridiculous. I once asked him, I had a friend, Stu Cornfield. Remember Stu Cornfield? He
Yes.
should continue to be well. So he was going to Hebrew U at the time that we were going to a yeshiva. At first, he went to Shalavim, then he went to Hebrew U. And so he'd always throw out some kind of challenging question to learning. So he said that the whole notion of creation, ex nihilo, yesh me'ayin, that that it's a modern concept. It's not an ancient concept. This is what he said. So somehow I was doing some research and I saw that it was referred to in the Sefer Yetzirah, and I naively went up to Reb Shlomo Fisher and I said the Sefer Yetzirah is miyuchas to Avraham Avinu. The ideas are meant to go back to Avraham Avinu. So I said, does that mean that if the Sefer Yetzirah makes reference to Yesh Me'ayin, that this has been a concept that's been known in the world since Avraham Avinu? So then, and he says to me, well, I know it's Miyuchas to Avraham Avinu, but really, if you look at it, it's written in the language of the Mishnah. It's pro he was saying it's probably, a little bit post-Mishnah, probably. And then, but he knew the quote. So all I said was I heard, and then he just like knew the quote I was talking about, and he says the quote. Like people were coming up to him, like you said, with all manner of things. It could require him to quote Jules Verne, or it's the Sefer Yetzirah, or
He knew the sine, cos, and tan tables, the trigonometric tables. I saw a copy in his house, and I asked his daughter what it's there. She says, "My father knows them, so
I'm not sure what they are, but
he does
it's something my father
mathematics.
knows.
He does mathematical calculations and geometry, and he knows these tables." And I was actually wondering about. I was going to ask him, "Are you?" Someone said to me, "You should not buy Hanukkah presents. It's not appropriate to buy Hanukkah presents." So I was in his house. And I see there's a Hirsch Chumash on the shelf in Hebrew. I pull it out and I open it, and it says it's a Hanukkah present from him to his wife.
Awesome. Awesome.
I remember, I don't, I think if I'm recall correctly, you and I
Yeah. Yeah.
walking up the hill to the bus stop, and you
Okay.
can see
In
the top of
Itri.
the
You're talking
hill,
about Itri.
and
Yeah.
you can see the 21 bus
Yeah.
was idling at the bus stop. So now it was always an issue. I can see the 21 bus. That means if it's idling at the bus stop, should I sprint like crazy to get the bus or not? Now, I remember we were discussing this, and we were saying that, well, you know how it is. If you're supposed to get the bus, you'll get it, right? And if you're not, maybe it's divine providence. And then as we're discussing this, Rav Shlomo Fisher rushes by us up the hill toward the
Running.
bus. Yeah. And we said,
It could have been his version of walking, though, because some of those people, he
Yes.
walked very fast.
Yeah. So we say, okay, we ran for the bus. We're wrong. We're wrong. This is from Shlomo Fisher. And I remember I once asked him a question, and again, this is so long ago, I don't know if I'm remembering correctly, but it was a question on the Gemara. And he says, why did Hashem speak to Moshe? What prompted Hashem to speak to Moshe the first time? Which has nothing to do with what I was asking him. And I said, I don't know, he saw the burning bush. He said, yep. So he says he turned his head to the side. I said, okay. And I'm wondering where he's going with this. He says, if you turn your head to the side of the page, you'd see that it references the Rambam.
No way.
And if you look at
No
the
way.
Rambam, he explains the Gemara.
Oh, nice.
So
Nice. Oh, that's awesome.
So
That's absolutely awesome.
yes, that was a great moment.
One
And
time, Akiva Turk, who became Akiva Tor, our friend, and I were learning, we were learning Kuzari Bein HaSdarim. I may have already mentioned this once, but I'm saying it again because we're talking about Reb Shlomo Fisher. We were learning Kuzari Bein HaSdarim, and which meant that on more than one occasion, we would have a question and go up to Reb Shlomo Fisher afterwards because he was the one we felt was the appropriate person to go to if you had a question about the Kuzari. And so somehow we had gotten into a discussion about cause and effect, and whether it's possible that that ultimately the world is, what is the word for that? Because I just lost the word. When everything is just a
Predetermined.
predetermined, predetermined, yeah. So, is it possible to have Torah in a world that is technically predetermined, which would mean without real
Free will.
free will? In other words, there might be something called free will, but it wouldn't ultimately be free will. So at first he said to us, it is possible. He said it would be po and if you ask yourself, so why is there Schar V'Onesh? You could say, like with a dog, it's behavioral. You like with a dog, there's
Yeah,
punishment or
I
reward
remember him
because
saying
you're
that.
trying to, yeah. But then the next day he called us back and he told us, I changed my mind. You can't say it. Now there was, and he never clarified to us what he was originally thinking or what he was thinking afterwards, but we left like in the afternoon thinking one thing, which was very startling to us that he said it. But then the next morning he called us back and goes, I changed my mind. You can't say it. You would then. So I don't know what was happening. He was obviously working on something at that time because, and then also during that Seder, there was a guy who came from the Gush that Akiva knew, who had been sent by the Rabbonim at Gush to come to learn with Reb Shlomo Fisher because this guy was going to be studying philosophy in Columbia the next year, and they wanted him to have some kind of exposure to a Talmud Chacham,
Who
in the
was
area of
familiar with
philosophy. Yeah,
philosophy?
right.
Yeah,
So this
familiar.
guy, he goes in for his first time, not has no idea what to expect, and he comes out. He is like, you could see he's like completely wiped out, and he came over. You know, he's a friend of Akiva's. He's had to explain what happened. He said, he started talking. And it was just about Aristotle. He never spoke about anything else this whole time. It was like 2 hours, and it was all about Aristotle because he said, until I understand Aristotle, I'm not going to understand the Rambam. And he felt, and so imagine somebody who looked like him, who looked like him,
Yerushalmi, to those who have not seen him, Yerushalmi with payas and a beard
and a flat.
and
He didn't
long
just have
flat,
like a
the
Yerushalmi
flat
hat. He had a
hat.
flat hat. He had
Flat
the
hat,
Yerushalmi
long.
stripe.
Yes,
You know,
yeah,
Bekshah.
the whole
He
works.
was told, and he lived in the dorms 5 days a
Fluent
week.
in world literature, science,
It was
philosophy,
just like
and the
how,
entire Torah on his fingertips. The entire Torah.
like how was it to us? It was just like, how is it possible that he could,
Yeah.
that he knew all this stuff, and he did. I mean, it was clear that he did. Yeah.
Yeah, so look, we didn't get through all of
Now we
our
just
speakers.
scratch the surface.
Just scratch the surface because these people are
Yeah.
just we're all amazing and giants, but
Right.
hopefully people have a taste of a little bit more.
Right. And especially Rabbi Gurvitz, who he was an important part of our
And you can
lives, and
access
we're
his
very
Divrei Torah,
grateful.
his books or
Or
Avraham.
Avram, not Dvar Avram, or
Or Avram,
Avram.
and you can access Rav Shlomo Fisher, although it's almost always goes out
Out
of
of print.
printed, as called Beis Yishai, Drush Beis Yishai. He's got two. He's got a Beis Yishai on Shas on the Talmud, and he's got Drushei Beis Yishai, which are Drishyam, which are just amazing stuff. If you can get it, just buy a second copy and send it to me. I'll pay for it. I have one, but I always looking for more. Give to friends. So,
You're just trying to make money off it. You figure you
of course.
stow it away, you wait for it to go out of print
No.
again, and then you make some money. Pay
Okay.
off a fastener.
If you enjoyed this, please do give us a like on YouTube or Spotify, etc., and recommend it to your friends. All two of them.
No, they have more than two
Oh,
friends.
that's true. Yes,
It's the two people.
the two people, your friends. Yes. Okay. You may
Right.
have many friends. So,
Yeah.
okay.
I'm
And
sure they have many friends. We're the ones that don't have many friends. They have many friends.
that is true. Right. Okay. Goodbye,
Okay.
and we'll see you next time.
All right. Be well.